Welcome, everybody, to the Sports Gambling Podcast. I'm your host, Sean, stacking the money green with my partner in picks, Ryan, Real Money Kramer. Ryan, what's shaking, buddy?
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Wow, that sounds like a term of gratitude that only a confident bettor would make. Ryan, what are you so happy about?
62%, Sean. That's what I'm happy about.
Well, 61.8, but yes, in the world of gambling, 62%. That's what are these guys who consider them sharps? They call themselves sharps.
They say the best in the world. If you go make a season 60%, that's a serious. I mean, the best guys in the world, I think, pick what, 55% over the course of a season.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. You really all you have to do is kind of just barely beat the vig, and have enough juice going that it's made. It's the worth
volume,
it well.
You know.
Well, Ryan, of course, is alluding to is the fact that he went out on a limb. He said a lot of people think it's crazy to bet on NFL preseason football, let alone NFL preseason football week one, where you got starters only seeing a couple series, the first quarter at most. But Ryan had a hunch backed up with some hard facts, and threw out there that he was going to lay down $100 for every under and every underdog.
Actually, Ryan, I went 50. I went 100 per game. So 50 on the dog, 50 on the under. Still, over the course of 17 games, that adds up.
Yeah, you threw $1,700 on preseason football.
Well, plus the vig. So I threw almost $2,000 on preseason football games.
How'd it feel? Now let's go over your record real quick.
Yeah. So the what did we say? The unders went 10-7.
Yep.
And the dogs went 11-6 for an overall 21-13. I don't know. It actually made it easier. I put all the bets in, and honestly, so I was on the East Coast, which, by the way, Sean, we really have it good out here. It's weird having sporting events going on at like 1 a.m. It really is nice to have everything start. You know, your baseball, basketball season games are starting at 4.
Yeah. Well, and also, like, as an Eagles fan, you forget that, hey, Monday Night Football against the Dallas Cowboys, yeah, sounds great on the East Coast. You're experiencing it, blah, blah, blah. But the game doesn't kick off really till 8:45. They crowbar in as many commercials as they can. 3.5 hours, you're 9 beers deep, and you're going to bed at 1:30. Yeah. Now on the West Coast, I can get blackout drunk, pass out at 10 a.m. I wake up at 8 a.m., I'm fresh as a daisy. I got 10 hours of sleep. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, it's really... Anyway, so basically doing a lot of stuff. Preseason pretty much started Thursday, right? And so I was in the city all day. So just, you know, coming back on the train about midnight. let me see how my bets are doing. I basically just scrolled through and was like, oh, I was basically looking for when the away team won. And the score was low. And I was like, oh, doing good so far. I watched like the fourth quarter of the Giants game live on TV. That's pretty much it. Like I don't think I watched more than two quarters of total preseason football in week one.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. Basically, although the NFL Network did kind of do a cool thing.
They broadcast every game now.
Well, they replay every game.
Yeah.
They don't broadcast them live, but what they were doing live Thursday night was that they were just doing basically kind of a version of the Red Zone channel, just cutting in between games. And, yeah, I mean, that's really all you're looking for, especially the first game. You're just looking to kind of get that taste of football back in your mouth. And, I was seeing some of the Eagles. I was listening to the home radio broadcast on the satellite radio, just getting fired up about the season once again. Of course, Michael Vick got injured. It was a light thumb bruise. He's completely fine.
That thumb's
fine.
Trouble.
Yeah, that was it's just fun to get back into the NFL season, really. Like, it's just like, hey, I got my whistle wet, I'm ready to go, you're starting to see things. And then it sucks because all this football that we're watching, really, you almost have to like look at and say, I'm not going to use this, I'm not going to include this in any of my judgment.
Yeah,
because it's so meaningless. Like, the Eagles' third-string quarterback, Nick Foles, looked amazing, looked great. We were talking off-pod that you're kind of joking around that Andrew Luck, he's a Hall of Fame quarterback now because...
Oh, I was serious. Have you seen his numbers?
He had an off-the-chart QB rating, and then you watch the game. I mean, he went 10 for 16. He had three drops. But, yeah, he looked pretty good. But his first throw in the NFL was a touchdown pass, but it was also a two-yard pass behind the line of scrimmage that he barely got off, and the guy just ran 75 yards. I mean, it's literally a throw that I'm pretty confident I could have made. Ryan, do you doubt that you could have made that throw?
Yeah.
You don't think you could?
I could have made that throw.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I'm not sure. I don't know. Could you have gotten it over the offensive lineman?
He didn't, but he didn't get it. He was behind.
No, there was a huge hole. I know.
The receiver was, it was a running back. It was just basically a glorified shovel pass that the guy took 80 yards to the house, and then they immediately brought up Peyton Manning on the SportsCenter. They immediately brought up Peyton Manning, and they showed the one of the all-time great murderers, Marvin Harrison, catching a five-yard slant route in his first preseason game, Peyton Manning's first preseason game, catching that and taking that to the house, and they're trying to make some sort of connection. But as much as we get annoyed at these people trying to make stories out of preseason football, much like we're trying to do on the podcast, and well, really, we're just talking about the gambling angle and what it holds for the future. In a way, I'm kind of like, I kind of like it. It just shows how established NFL football is. In that, I mean, Ryan, we grew up sports fans. Do you remember a time when NFL preseason football would dominate the news coverage, dominate the sports newspaper? I mean, there weren't blogs,
no.
But this is the time when you would just be getting inundated with basketball. You get a training camp report here and there, but it just shows how we've gone all in on the NFL, and I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I mean, even the big news story of the weekend really should have been the Dwight Howard news, and it was kind of just one of the news stories along with preseason stuff. I mean, the Andrew Luck thing was a bigger story on SportsCenter.
Andrew Luck was a bigger thing. I would argue that Chad Johnson getting cut from the Dolphins, you're looking at a 11-year receiver getting cut from the Dolphins compared to the trade of one of the best big men of all time in another sport?
Now, speaking of, we have to stop talking. We have to talk about Dwight Howard for a second.
Okay, let's do a quick Dwight Howard analysis on the trade.
First of all, well, there's a bunch of things here I don't fully understand. But number one, I don't understand what the Magic GM was doing. He got some draft picks and a bunch of young players. And in fact, the deal almost didn't happen because he did not want Andre Iguodala. They did not want Bynum or Iguodala. That's why Denver had to be the fourth team. And I also don't understand how Philly's doctors passed Andrew Bynum in the physical, and as he's already going to Germany to get some crazy knee procedure done. I don't understand how this trade to me was a million more times lopsided than the Chris Paul trade that David Stern came in and vetoed.
Well, the NBA doesn't own the Orlando Magic,
true.
Right?
Now, and if you make a deal like this and get nothing in return, you at least have to get rid of Turkoglu's contract.
I know.
And their picks, all the picks are top five protected. They're not all next year. I don't know. Bottom line is, now, as you know, we live in L.A., Sean.
Yes.
And it's been a nice 2 years. Laker flag free 2 years.
Dude, the Laker flags have been flying at half mast. Because they realize they're not going to, the past couple of years, they realize they're not in title contention. And the division playoffs, you don't see the Laker flags. You don't see the flags come out till they're in the conference finals. And that's even when they're up two games. They got to be up 2-0. Maybe 2-1, then you see Laker flags start popping up.
And now, I am at a huge personal crossroads as I despise the Lakers. And as you know, I've always liked Kobe Bryant, but I love Dwight Howard. So now, and I like Steve Nash. So now I'm in the situation where I don't know how I'm not going to root for them. I don't know how they're not going to win the championship. Their front court, the only front court, I was thinking about this today at work. The only front court I can think of, power forward center combo, that might, you could argue, is better is David Robinson, Tim Duncan. But the Pau Gasol, Dwight Howard, I mean, you couldn't have two better complementary players.
Yeah, I mean,
especially if Gasol plays like he was playing in the Olympics.
He played hard. We'll get to the Olympics.
Oh, my goodness.
We got Olympics Dream Team talk to get to briefly. All right, I'll give you my thoughts on the trade. Yeah, like you said, it seems
as a
I mean, really, what completes this Lakers team more?
Nothing.
What I mean, really, what completes them more? Chris Paul or Steve Nash and Dwight Howard? That, I mean, that if you're going to stop anything, you stop the Dwight
Howard
trade.
Now, the other thing I'm not fully sure on is the luxury. I mean, the
it just shows
salary
that
cap is $55 million. The luxury cap is like $70 million. They now have, I believe, Kobe's making around like $27 million. Howard and Gasol both make $20 million, and Nash is making $10 million.
Dude, the salary cap is non-existent in the NBA, and the Lakers are just showing that.
Well, you just have to pay. You pay dollar for dollar over the luxury tax. So they're just going to
pay.
Yeah,
but they don't care. The TV rights and whatever it is, they just do not care. And why would they? I mean, if you had a chance to get Dwight Howard, it's worth paying double his salary. It's worth it.
Yeah. Now, I will say this. It's going to suck trying to not root for this during the season, but a Heat-Lakers finals would be pretty awesome.
I know, and that's exactly what David Stern said when he was when he was in his maniacal NBA bat cave, and he was thinking and looking at these. I could see the Lakers and versus the Heat. It would be diabolical. Like, yes, that's exactly what he wanted. They wanted a super team in the West. They put it together. He gave it his blessing. They got the team. I'm not even a conspiracy theory guy, but this is exactly what David Stern wanted, is a super team in the West. Is it a coincidence that he didn't go to the Nets? Is Dwight Howard that much of a pussy that he didn't want to own a team?
Who knows? I mean, Deron Williams, he was there already. That's
and now, look at this, though. I mean, even if you just had Steve Nash and Dwight Howard, that pick and roll is pretty crazy. Now, imagine that pick and roll when you could possibly be hitting. You have that pick and roll opportunity, and then you could also be dishing to a Pau Gasol or a Kobe Bryant. Kobe, this is going to give Kobe an extra 1 or 2 years because, you know, guys like Jordan and whatever had to develop a back to the rim game where you had to just take a guy down a low post, back him down. Is Kobe going to have to back down guys anymore? Why would he?
No, he's
going to
be a jump
shooter.
You're going
to create so much traffic. Are guys going to go out to the wing and double cover Kobe Bryant and then leave Dwight Howard or Pau Gasol in the middle single covered? Are you fucking crazy? Steve the one argument is Steve Nash is not great on defense. Well, you know who is great on defense? Defensive Player of the Year Dwight Howard. Yeah. All right, you're Russell Westbrook. Sure, blow by Steve Nash, and then Dwight Howard's going to block the shit out of you, or Pau Gasol is going to slow you down, or Ron Artest is going to get the rebound. I mean
Turkoglu played decent defense when Dwight Howard was on his team. It's not very hard.
Dude, yeah, if you have a big man, if you've ever played pickup basketball, you know what it's like to have an amazing big man just clogging up the center. It makes your job that much easier on defense. You can take risks that you never thought you could take before. I mean, even Steve Nash, if Steve Nash goes for a steal and he gets burned, on the Suns, who was going to help him out?
Robin Lopez?
I mean, the guy's all right. You know, he can get some boards and get some points, but he's not a defensive stud. Yeah. Now, from the Sixers' point of view, they took on Jason Richardson and Andrew Bynum, obviously. Now, Andrew Bynum is a guy, I'm going to root for the Sixers, but he's a guy that I hated personally. Just his attitude in general, it is just atrocious. He's just a guy you don't want to root for in any sense. But also, he's a guy, maybe he can turn it around. Maybe he can put his shit together. Here's the thing. He came in not wanting to re-sign a long-term extension, which I think from the Sixers' point of view is amazing. So, you got Jason Richardson and you got Andrew Bynum. Two guys, and I'm pretty sure Jason Richardson is on the last year of his contract. I know Bynum is for sure. So, Bynum's coming in on a contract year. If he doesn't play well, even if he's playing well just for a contract, I'm fine with that. And here's the thing. They don't, you know, Bynum's a problem. He's a cancer. Fine, blow it up. You free up a ton of cap space.
Yeah,
and you have
still
a chance
really
to
young.
Yeah, and you have Doug Collins, a really good coach. Maybe he can, I mean, it's tough. If you know, in my mind, if Phil Jackson can't win over Andrew Bynum, I don't know what coach can, but maybe Doug Collins can kind of sell him on the idea of owning this team, owning this city. You know, the city of Philadelphia.
He's from close to Philly, too.
The city of Philadelphia will rally around anyone who wins. So if he comes in and starts dominating, playing like the man beast that he is, they will rally around him. And as far as his knee, yeah, he went to that shady doctor in Germany that is essentially, in my mind, a steroid dealer, kind of under the table, using some pseudo blood spinning human growth hormone aspect that we don't know about. But, you know, A-Rod and Kobe both recovered well, I thought, from their treatments there. And then Iguodala going to Denver. I was kind of surprised he ended up in Denver. The Magic are crazy. That's the piece I don't understand. I understand they wanted to get rid of him. I think maybe they were just hearing. I mean, it's crazy on both ends because Dwight Howard ended up re-signing that extension that he didn't have to re-sign. So I could see kind of being in the Magic's point of view of like, well, maybe he is committing to this team and kind of wanting to believe that he will stay there. But when you have just that straight-up deal, Dwight Howard for Andrew Bynum, how do you not take that?
Yeah. I mean, three last things I'll say about this. One, Bynum's from South Jersey, so if he's going to play hard for any team, you would think it'd be his hometown team.
Well, you get away from the Soft Brothers, get back to the Hard Brothers on the East Coast.
Yeah, now, to your point about the Magic, I don't know what they were thinking. But, so I walked into work today, and decided to ask some of the Laker fans, you know, how.
Oh, no, but sorry, real quick, as far as rooting for the Lakers, I'm kind of in that same quandary. Well, it's a little bit different. I love Steve Nash. He's hard not to like. Kobe Bryant, I initially hated on, but kind of just have this begrudging respect of, like, this dude is kind of the man and has this intense competitive thing and a work ethic, but I kind of hate, like, he's kind of the spoiled rich kid who is also talented. Like, you want to hate him for everything that's been given to him.
He's fluent in Italian, for God's sake.
No, he is a spoiled rich kid. But it's the analogy makes sense, too, in that, like, he has been given so much when it comes to other coaches. Coaches, other players, that whole thing. Like, he's had so much more opportunities, even than, like, a Michael Jordan. So I think to compare him to Michael Jordan is just ludicrous. But you also got to kind of love his crazy competitive edge that you don't see out of a lot of players in the NBA.
Yeah, he's the only guy.
And then Dwight Howard was another guy that I never cared for. Always thought he was soft. The kind of the way he handled things in Miami, I just didn't care for him. I think maybe it went all the way back to when you used to kick my ass in NBA 2K, 2K10 with Dwight Howard, and so I just
dominate the rim.
I always just was annoyed at him. That was back when I had LeBron on Cleveland, and I would just put the team on his back, and everyone, you know, I'd win like one out of three games, but normally be tough because you would just block up the middle with Dwight Howard, and then just rain threes with Turkoglu. And, Redick or whoever.
So I got into work, and this is a consistent point of view from Laker fans, independent conversations with one another. They were most happy that the Clippers, they're like, just when the Clippers thought they had L.A. It's like, you guys are so nervous about your, anyway. But the last thing is, I truly think.
You have like 19 championships.
Yeah, I really
you
think.
You can't hang on to fans with
I
that.
I really think a lot, like. I think Dwight Howard clearly loves himself. Dwight Howard clearly wants to do more than basketball. And I think a lot
so
of this
gross.
Might just have to do with he wants to step all over Shaq. He doesn't see it as following Shaq. He sees it as taking Shaq's path and conquering it harder.
And maybe that is. Maybe that is. Maybe Kobe plays for another 2 years. He's already conceded that point, Kobe Bryant. Already openly talking about his retirement, saying, hey, we got this piece, Dwight Howard, that we think, after I'm out of here in a few years, that he can kind of be the next cornerstone to the I'm just tired of these Laker dynasties that you just feel like the fans don't earn it out here. It's just so unappreciated, their dominance.
As a Yankee fan, I understand what it must feel like to be a Laker fan. My problem with it is, you can go to New York and you can talk to genuine New York Yankee fans. And I understand there's tons of Yankee fans all over the country and the world. That's why they get a bad name. But in L.A., there aren't as many diehard Laker fans. It's so many just like, oh, the Lakers are in the playoffs.
Well, it is funny because Laker season starts when the playoffs start. I mean, when was the last time the Dodgers won a World Series? What, 86, something like that?
I would argue the Dodgers are the most are the in terms of a fan base that follows their team even when they suck.
The Dodgers are the most legit fan base. The only time
I mean you saw, the Kings, but they just don't have as many fans.
Right? No, yeah, those I guess fans I mean like consistent intense. And yeah. Number of fans. Yeah, the Dodger fan base is legit. They stick with the team. I mean, the only time you saw them kind of abandon the team was with the whole Frank McCourt thing, and that's kind of understandable. It was less about abandoning the Dodgers and more just kind of a protest against the horrific ownership.
But, yeah, to your point, I don't know. That's going to be an interesting matchup because the Lakers can't really slow down LeBron and Wade, and I don't think the Heat have any chance at slowing down Howard and Gasol.
Well, you know what? I think right now, if I had to pick a team to win a 7-game series, Ryan, I'm going to say it.
I'll take Kobe.
Give me the Lakers. Yeah. And here's why, because I think...
Although LeBron is really...
He might
have turned the corner on beast mode.
Well, all right. I'll give you real quick, and we'll get into LeBron. We'll talk some Olympics. My real quick thought there initially is that I feel like great inside play, great rebounding, great big men generally beats out great shooters. But LeBron, like you said, kind of turned the corner, kind of went into beast mode. When he made that dunk, that gold medal game, you could just feel that. And then they showed the rundown of Michael Jordan's 1992 season, and it was regular season MVP, I might have been All-Star MVP, obviously Finals MVP, and gold medal, and then LeBron had all those same things, and LeBron is finally the boy becoming the man. He's finally realized, like, no, dude, you know what? He had this moment where it was always his team in Cleveland, but it was always his team in Cleveland because the rest of the team in Cleveland fucking sucked. So now he went to Miami. That first year, he was still kind of figuring his way around. And whatever, they still had a really great season. I mean, they lost to Dallas.
They went 6 games in the finals.
Yeah, it's not like they were that far off. I mean, everyone wants to look at it as a colossal failure. But then this season, Dwayne Wade stepped aside, realized LeBron was a man. And LeBron, to his credit, as much as I've criticized him, took that mantle and just said, you know what, I am the man. And he fucking owned it, and it was amazing to watch. It was incredible to watch. You know, he took that clutch three in the gold medal game against Spain. He made that nice drive to the hole and just fucking dunked on Spain.
That was like an NBA Jam dunk. The way he, like, lifted up and the ball over the head. That reminded me of those dunks in NBA Jam where they're spinning around.
Classic gambling moment. So I hadn't seen much of the Dream Team this year in the Olympics. And I was like, you know what? I got to watch these games. I haven't watched any of them. And the Olympic coverage has been weird.
Sucked. You can say the Olympic coverage sucks.
Well, you know what it is? I figured it out. What happens is the Olympics are sports, but it's primarily women. Women are really drawn to the Olympics because what they do is they package all these storylines. And what it is, and now especially, the networks... The only time people watch commercials now are live sporting events. And women normally don't watch live sporting events. So you have this opportunity to hit the female demographic with commercials that they're actually going to watch via live sporting events. So I think they took advantage and made the programming very dominant towards women, just by the events.
Here's another reason why being on the East Coast sucks. So they have all their online apps and stuff, and you can watch live feeds of any sporting event and hope to catch it. But
the gold medal game was 7 o'clock Pacific.
Yeah,
but you can't even find what channel it's on.
They actually broadcast like the soccer and the basketball games live. What killed me is like the swimming and track events. They would save up, play them in prime time. And on the East Coast, they don't actually load the videos up on the website until they've been broadcast in all time zones. So on the East Coast, you know, the Olympics are going on until midnight. So you can't watch the replay on the internet until 3 a.m. It's really stupid.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, it's like
Plus, you had the awesome dynamic of Al Michaels and Bob Costas in the same room, and they hate each other. Like, there was a couple times. Cause
really? I didn't know about that dynamic.
Well, I don't know if they actually... there always seems to be a little, like... I think Al Michaels thinks Bob Costas is a clown, and...
Oh, really?
Bob Costas thinks
Dan
Al Michaels...
Patrick is kind of seemingly cool with both of them.
Yeah, but, I mean, I think there's I don't know.
Supposedly Al Michaels...
I mean, look, they did the movie Basketball together, so who knows? Maybe
supposedly,
they're great friends.
Supposedly Al Michaels, real cool dude. He's
loves
a huge...
Loves
betting, loves drinking. You saw him at the Kings game with his flip phone. I think all he does is just broadcast Monday Night Football, golfs, and gets drunk. I mean, really...
Figures out a way to crowbar the spread into every Monday Night game.
Really, if you asked any red-blooded male what their dream was, it would be to be Al Michaels. Like, for a guy who's already realized he's not going to be an athlete.
There was a great compilation on YouTube. I don't know, I guess NBC during the Olympics got privy to all the other things people were stealing from them, and so it got taken down. But it was this great video. Someone put a compilation together of... It must have been the last 15 years of Al Michaels calling games, and it was every time he referenced the spread. It would be like, oh, and there a breeze blows open the back door. Like real subtle stuff, but every game... Oh, it was
that's great.
Classic.
All right, so real quick, I was like, all right, I'm going to be around doing some work here. I can watch the game, though. It's basically the semifinals for the gold medal game where they play Argentina. The spread is 23 points, over under 194.5. USA jumps out to a huge lead. Kobe drains, I think, three threes in a row to start the game. They're up 19-4 to start it off. They call a timeout. Argentina comes back. They go back and forth. Ginobili hits a three right before halftime. We're looking at 47-40 halftime. So the spread is not looking good, and the over is not looking good. I made both bets, two separate bets, and I was like, all right, wow, this is not looking good. You know, went to the halftime spreads. No way I could kind of buy back some action. So I was like, all right, just got to ride this one out. Second half goes on. USA starts pulling away, doing their thing. They start making some points. Carmelo starts hitting some threes. Kevin Durant starts hitting some threes. They start pulling away. They go on a crazy run to the point that they're up 29 points. And they're up... Well, let me see here. It's
by the way, Kevin Durant with this close three-point line is just
I know.
It's unfair.
Really, a 6'10 dude who can just drain threes. So they're up 109-80. So it's 189 is the total. So I need 6 points to hit the over. But I also can't have 6 points from Argentina because that would be a push on the spread. So it's 109-80. USA is up. It's 40 seconds left. Argentina dribbles over half court. No one's guarding each other, essentially letting the clock run down. Guy realizes the shot clock's going to expire. There's 15 seconds left. Chucks up a three. A good 10 feet behind the three-point line, which is close, but still, like, that's probably still, like, 5 feet behind an NBA three-point line. Swish. So now my heart's racing, because now all I need is 3 more points to hit the over and still cover the spread from the USA. You know these USA guys, they love the chance to chuck up these threes, dribble it over the line, 14 seconds left, and just let it run out. And yep. I was just screaming at the TV, you motherfuckers! The total came in at 192, 2.5 points off, and then you just look back and think of like these easy putbacks... Fucking Kevin Love missed, or like a free throw that he couldn't hit. It's just like, oh my God.
So did you watch the gold medal game?
No, that's what I was saying. I wanted to watch it live, but it was at 7 a.m.
So the timing
at a party Saturday night. Yeah. I'm not going to wait.
The timing worked out. I was on the East Coast, so game was at 10.
All right, that's a little more.
Watch the game. Watching the Spanish. Now, granted, Pau Gasol played tough. Like, he was the only guy in Spain that seemed like he played in the NBA. Rudy Fernandez, who, by the way, is not coming back to the NBA. He's actually signed a contract to play in Spain. This motherfucker flopped around like a fish. to the point where, like, Chris Paul was getting fired up. And I don't know if you saw a couple games earlier against France. He, at one point, he flopped. He kind of, like, he got nudged a little bit. Jumped in the air completely, kicked his feet out, fell on the ground, started holding his stomach. The trainers come over. They start putting ice on his back. It was this whole, like, what's going on? So later in the game, Nicholas Batum, who plays for the Portland Trail Blazers, he later was asked after the game why he flagrantly fouled Rudy Fernandez. He's like, well, that guy kept flopping around, so I wanted to make sure I wanted to foul him so he could flop. And he came over and just punched him. It was pretty intense. But yeah, those European guys are such fruits.
Well, the Argentina players. That's why.
Oh my god!
They
just, like, it's horrible.
That's why I took the USA there, was because the USA was all pissed off about. There was some, like,
yeah, the backup point guard for Argentina punched Carmelo in the nuts.
Yeah, I was like, all right,
it was one of those things you see in a pickup game. Carmelo shoots the three, and the point guard, as he's coming down from his jump, just comes over and punches him in the nuts.
Yeah, because they kind of do that back-setted hand check, but he actually followed through with it and went right in the nuts.
He clearly knew what he was doing. It was pretty crazy.
There was no accident there. All right, Ryan, let's get back to the real sport.
But by the way, we should point out the one thing we told you to bet on.
Yes. No, our two bets.
There were a couple of things. Usain Bolt, we said, was good value, only at minus 300.
Yeah, it came in.
And the other one, actually, one bet I took, stupidly, I put a I put 100 bucks on, just for fun, I put 100 bucks on Jamaica to win the 4x100 relay at minus 500.
Oh, okay.
Because they were definitely going to win. But
so you won 20
after
bucks?
I made the bet, I was like, that's stupid. I'm only going to win 20. But and the gold or the total medal count, we suggested taking the United States.
No, I think we was actually suggested medal? We suggested total medal count and total gold medals. So both were
either
minus 200 and both hit. So you're welcome, America.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to a little bit of football, Ryan. Of course, we just watched episode 2 of The Hard Knocks, starring the Miami Dolphins and Joe Philbin.
Now I know we're not gonna do the over unders this year or yet, but we're taking the under on Miami. Joe Phil, he has nothing. He's not a good head coach. He's scared to talk to players. He's scared to cut Chad Johnson. He's horrible.
Well, here's the thing. Yeah, we if you haven't seen the episode 2, we're stepping on a little bit, but obviously everyone knows.
Spoiler alert: Chad Johnson gets cut.
Chad Johnson gets cut. And the episode ends with basically a very long, drawn-out, it's not you, it's me, between, fucking Philbin and Chad Johnson. And you just feel really bad for Chad Johnson. And I understand you want to try to be nice, but you got to realize, like, you're not going to be friends with Chad Johnson. You probably will never see this guy again. You don't have to burn any bridges, but just go, hey, man. That was an incident. It didn't work. We told you you were on a one-strike policy. You're gone.
Yeah, I mean, I always compare the most recent memory was when they did the Cincinnati Bengals Hard Knocks. First of all, they had that weird guy that would collect the playbooks and bring the but
the Turk.
Marvin Lewis was really good at cutting people. He was like, "Here's the deal. We don't have room for you on the team. Best of luck in the future. I really appreciate the time." Like, Marvin Lewis is an NFL football coach. Joe Philbin, not an NFL football coach.
He lacks, if we were analyzing him as a player, he lacks confidence.
You know who, he reminds me a lot of Jason Garrett, also not an NFL football
coach.
Yes,
they're guys that, when you see them, it's like a sense you got normally just from watching a couple of press conferences.
You gotta be scared of the guy a little bit, you know, he's the coach.
You don't fear or respect his authority. It's a weird thing. Like, Andy Reid is... There's, like, guys like Tom Coughlin, who is, like, a yeller and whatever, and a disciplinarian.
Well, it's one of those things. Like, Tom Coughlin, Herm Edwards staring at you, you're going to be a little scared if you're a player. You're like, oh, shit.
But even there's a, like, a Steve Mariucci, even
John Gruden, look at him.
Yeah, John Gruden, crazy guy. But even, like, Andy Reid... not quite as vocal or crazy as maybe a Tom Coughlin, like maybe a little bit less of a yeller, but still has a swagger.
Well, he's gained respect, too.
Yes.
I mean, that's one of those. Like, I wonder what Andy Reid was like early in his career.
No, and maybe we're just watching Joe Philbin. Honestly, that's if I was the Miami. Now, obviously, the Miami Dolphins owner, this guy seems hell bent on getting publicity. getting asses in the seats. Obviously, you saw their first preseason game. There was maybe 5,000 people there. It's still a professional football game. People. I mean, let's support our country.
It was the fourth quarter in the Giants game, and there were still lots of people there.
In the Eagles game, they kicked a game-winning field goal to win 24-23. DeSean Jackson went up and started shaking Andy Reid like, "Hey man, we did," you know, basically implying, "Hey man, we did this for your son." Which is like, it's still a preseason game, and there was a moment of silence for Garrett Reid, Andy Reid's. You know, he tragically lost his son. And also, yeah, I totally forgot about that story. Joe Philbin, who was an assistant or a coordinator on the Packers, and he had tragically lost his son. Different circumstances, it seems like. I tried to really figure out the story.
It might not be that different. I mean,
it
seemed like they were both self-inflicted in some way.
Yeah, well, I guess Garrett Reid, it was implied that it was a drug overdose, that he lost his battle addiction with heroin. And, Joe Philbin's son, it seems like he was drunk and fell through the ice of a river. I mean, it sounds like Joe Philbin's son was 21 and they were hanging out somewhere. And this is total speculation, but it was probably just some drunk 21-year-olds fucking around and a guy fell through the river. So that's pretty tragic, and maybe that's why he comes off so cold. And he doesn't – if I was the owner, I'd be like, no, this is my coach's first season being a head coach. Why would you want him – why would you want the added scrutiny of the Hard Knocks cameras? You can't tell me the fact that him chastising Chad Johnson for his profanity in week one of the week one of Hard Knocks, you can't tell me that didn't affect him cutting him in the week two, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason you'll never see the Eagles and the Giants and the Steelers and the Patriots and teams like that do Hard Knocks, because it's not a good idea.
No, I mean, I'm glad teams do it. And
I mean, look, Jacksonville's going to be doing it. It's a promotional tool.
Like, right, and I get it. It's a great promotional tool. It gets people to buy into
your
team.
That's why the Cowboys have done it twice. Jerry Jones wants to do it every year.
Yeah, he wants to have his own show just called Cowboys Hard Knocks.
Jerry's World.
Dude, why would you not now? If you're Jerry Jones, why would you not almost just do your own Hard Knocks, put it like video on demand? And you also have total editorial control.
I think most of these teams are to some, like the, it does seem the local like, TV channels. They're basically putting on their own mini like inside training sort of camp version, where they have footage.
But I mean, really, that's
the problem is HBO just does it so much better.
I mean, you got that announcer, you got the amazing cameras, the cuts, the edits,
like slow motion of dude like offensive linemen banging into each other, sweating looks so awesome.
I know, you're seeing sweat fly off a 300-pound guy, and you're just mesmerized. Or you just see a sprinkler head, a close-up of a sprinkler head, and it's, like, hypnotically beautiful.
I was watching it with Lindsay last night, and they made
it. Oh, that's the other great thing. You can just suck the women into it.
And they made
my girlfriend knows who David Garrard is.
they made the grounds crew spray-painting the lines in the field so epic. Like, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. It's just like, shh.
It just shows you how you can take moments of filmmaking and or just like the most mundane thing and just turn it into epic moments. All right, Ryan.
So we get started?
Well, real quick, let's get your take on Chad Johnson. Did the Miami Dolphins make the right move by cutting Chad Johnson?
Who knows? I mean, he has
over-under on games Chad Johnson plays this year. I'll set the line at 6.
Games played?
Yes.
Yeah, so here's how it's going to work. If teams wait until after the first game to sign a player, the salary is not guaranteed. So he will get signed, undoubtedly, he'll get signed. He'll definitely play over 6 games. I was going to say, let's set the touchdown line to 2.
Well, what was it last year? It was 2, right?
Was
and
it?
He got 1?
I just think he clearly can still offer a team something. I mean, him and T.O. are... like, they're two dudes that don't do anything wrong except for be, like, a loudmouth, arrogant black dude, really.
But, I don't know. I mean, you look at that Eagles team, I think Terrell Owens was detrimental. I mean, he wasn't a bad...
He also played on a broken leg in the Super Bowl, so...
No, he did... Don't get me wrong. He did a lot right for the team. But I think having a press conference, doing crunches and calling out the team...
Andy Reid, if you had abs like that, you might have a press conference on your driveway, new crunches.
Andy Reid is generally kind of, I would consider himself a player's coach. He's not a disciplinarian. But if he's cutting you off the team, it means you're harming the team in some
fashion.
Here's
the thing.
Ryan, to say, yes, I agree. We argue about this all the time. I agree ESPN made it worse than it was and portrayed him as a bad guy. But he was poisonous to that Eagles team and that Eagles locker room. You can't tell me he didn't hurt the team in some way.
And yet he was the only reason they were in that Super Bowl. I think what Philbin has done here is set a really bad example or a really good example. He's now made it very clear, like, you screw up once,
well, here's
and you're
the
off
thing.
The
this,
team.
This is the Hard Knocks thing. Well, and I think when they brought Chad Johnson in, they said, hey, we have a one-track policy. Here's the thing. They played that clip of him telling Chad Johnson, you got to fall in line. You can't be cursing at the press conference. Would that ever have been a story? Would anyone ever known that? No. And he would have easily been able to eat that crow and just move on. But now you can't publicly. Basically, this guy is 3 weeks on the job. He can't. Yeah. Not stick to his word.
Well, we also don't. I mean, he might not have been doing that well in camp and all this other garbage, but so Carlos Dansby, defensive leader, or one of their defensive leaders, came out and said that, you know, he thinks the team made a bad move, they should have gotten behind him, this and that, and I don't know. I just think, now if any player on this team has any sort of, like, I feel like he's really drawn a fine
line.
Well,
now, also, you were saying,
not that it matters.
The incident was he headbutted his wife of 5 months. Supposedly, it revolved around the fact that she found a receipt for some condoms.
Here's the thing with a headbutt, unlike a punch. It's two heads colliding. It's really hard to know who did what.
No, honestly.
And if you want to have some fun, go on YouTube and look up.
This is what I was getting to.
Yeah, sorry. Chad Johnson's wife's name is Evelyn Lozada, EvelynLozada. Just look up, search for the video, Evelyn Lozada is gangsta. You'll really enjoy the narrator of the video. He's this fabulous black guy. And basically, it's a video of her taking a glass you might drink whiskey on the rocks out of, standing up, taking that glass and throwing at another human being at point-blank range. She's clearly insane. There's another video of her getting in, like, a wrestling match. She's clearly volatile. I'm pretty confident she headbutted him.
You know what? Going into this, I guess I just assumed Chad Johnson headbutted her. But then I had a moment, and I was like, that doesn't sound like
Chad
Johnson.
Why would you headbutt a girl? Like, what?
Well, that doesn't make, yeah, I mean, it doesn't make sense for a lot of reasons. But here's the other thing. Yeah, he's been in the league for 11 years. Never had a violent incident. He's not a drinker.
I mean, even go back further than that. I don't think he has a criminal record, period. I don't think he has any DUIs. I don't think he's ever been in bar fights.
I think he's like T.O. They don't drink. They don't do drugs. They just hook up with crazy chicks.
Their drug is themselves on video.
Well, yeah. And, I mean, maybe some of it is kind of on Chad Johnson to be like,
yeah, he put himself in a bad situation.
Well, you know, you get with a Chad must have seen these clips. I mean, he was aware of her career as the basketball wives lady.
Yeah, I mean,
he's
still clearly married
her.
They had a show. That's why they got married.
Yeah,
they're trying to make some money on the side. It was called Eve and Ocho. I guess that's canceled now. Very unfortunate.
Oh no.
But yeah, I don't know. It just seems like I think Philbin can quickly lose this team based on his actions in cutting Chad Johnson.
But if he didn't cut Chad Johnson, don't you think that kind of makes him a pushover and sets the bar? These are fucking professional athletes in Miami. They're hanging out in this ritzy hotel that, for some reason, every other training camp, they're in, like, shitbox dorm rooms.
Yeah, I mean,
no,
the Giants are staying in University of Albany dorm rooms.
They're staying at, like, penthouse. Eagles stay in Lehigh University dorms. Yeah. It's like, you know, your run-of-the-mill dorms. They get two college beds and put them together so a 300-pound lineman can lay across them. Why would you get some – they can't help themselves. It's so, fucking Miami.
Well, and that's why I love the under, because he could easily lose the team by week six. You know, I don't know. I just
– Well, and it's like, where do you see this pile of talent that's going to – that's going to beat out the bad coaching?
Yeah, I don't know. It seemed like it was a questionable decision.
Yeah, but it's like I said, I think it's he's got to try to establish his name somewhere.
Yeah,
and guess. They save a few million, but now you got David Garrard. He's got to get knee surgery, so you're either going into the starting
all right, Sean.
Season with either what game Tannehill.
Well, it's going to be Tannehill, I think.
Yeah, because they want.
I have a feeling that they're going to want Garrard as the backup, and they're going to trade Matt Moore. All right, what week do the?
Someone brought this up. The key, what you got to do is if you have a rookie, and I forget who was saying it, but they were talking about the Tennessee situation. They're like, no, oh no, I think it was Warren Sapp. He's like, no. He's like, no, brother. You start the veteran.
Let him be the savior.
And then let the rookie come in. He's like, if the rookie ain't doing it, you know how black guys in the
NFL. Speaking of guys who beat their wives.
Yeah. Guys who are insanely bankrupt for some reason. You know, life is not going well when you list your 10,000 pairs of Jordans in your bankruptcy as an asset.
All right, Sean, what week does Philbin lose the team? At Houston, that's a loss.
Ooh.
Oakland at home, that'll be a good game.
Interesting.
Jets at home.
Division game. Dolphins always play Jets tough.
At Arizona.
And Patriots tough.
At Arizona.
Very winnable.
At Cincy.
That's going to be tough in Cincy.
Wow, they have an easy schedule. I haven't looked at their schedule. St. Louis, bye week, at Jets, at Indy, Tennessee, at Buffalo. I don't know,
dude. Now that we just laid that out, what they got to do to get to the bye.
They have an easy schedule, man.
I mean, even if they're just going, how many games have they got to the bye? Seven?
They could go 4-2. Six. They could go 4-2.
Even if they're 3-3, he's not going to lose the team 3-3 going into a bye week.
If they start off 0-3, though, you know, who knows?
But even anyway. If they get, then you can sell the guy. We win these next three. We're going to the bye week. Even if you're 2-4, you're only two games out of 500. I mean, hell, dude, the Giants won the Super Bowl at 9-7. At 2-4, you cannot be panicking. The Super Bowl champs did not win a game in November.
Yep. Someone should tell Tony Romo about that.
Yeah, he's got it switched with December. All right, Ryan, let's get to week two.
All right.
NFL preseason.
So I'm not sure if I want to go a full-on just close. I feel like if you're going to bet on preseason, you got to close your eyes and just do the same thing for every game, right?
Yeah.
So I'm noticing, one thing I'm noticing, looking at the lines, the over-unders are creeping up a little bit.
Okay.
I think they're creeping up. So week two, what do we usually see? Starters maybe in for a quarter?
Yeah. Well,
week three is when they play like a half.
Traditionally, yeah.
And I'm seeing more and more teams.
No, you know what? No, normally, I mean, the old schedule they used to do is first game they play a quarter.
Now they play a series.
Yeah. Now it's kind of whittled down to a series. It all depends. And then second game, they usually play most of the first half. Third game. I'm saying traditionally. Yeah.
But you know what's different is with this new CBA, they can't practice as much in pads, so they're going to sit the guys they know, and they're going to play a lot more like guys battling for positions.
No, yeah, obviously things have changed. I'm telling you, the old ways used to be.
So it used to be
very easy to figure out.
I'm going to go out on a limb, and I've also been reading a lot of younger teams are going to play their starters longer. I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to say. You take the dogs. Every single dog. Not touching the total.
All right.
Just going every dog. So
do go money line or are we taking the points?
So I'll rattle off the games. I'll let you guess the spread, Sean.
All right, let's do that. So I'm down with all the dogs again.
Cleveland travels to Green Bay to face the Packers on Thursday. Two Thursday games this week.
I'll say Browns plus six.
Yeah, that's your brain's in regular season mode. Well, somewhere in between, it's 3 points.
Okay,
so all I'm taking the dog there. I think they're going to give Whedon a lot of time. Richardson is out, but I'm still going to. The Packers have a lot of guys. They're not going to play a lot. I think
they're they're kind of a veteran team. They got they got a
second game. Bengals Falcons. Bengals travel to Atlanta.
3.5.
4.5.
Okay.
Give me the Bengals. By the way, I'm reading these reports where they're like, we wouldn't be surprised if Matt Ryan breaks 5,000 yards passing this year.
And I wouldn't be surprised if they did that. I wouldn't be surprised if Matt Ryan broke 5,000 yards and they only won 10 games this year.
Yeah, he can't play outside. We need to figure this. I mean, just watch the tape of the game against the Giants. Tennessee travels to Tampa Bay.
No, he's the next Tony Romo. Tragically flawed game, but great physical ability.
All right, so now we're on to Friday. Tennessee at Tampa Bay.
Tennessee at Tampa Bay. Tennessee plus 2.5.
It's 3.
Damn.
You're close, though. A lot of juice on the 3.
All right.
So you're right. You're basically right.
I want to be bored and just say plus 3 at every road team, but I want to mix it up a little bit.
All right, so we're going to roll with the Titans there. Moving on. The Miami Dolphins of Hard Knocks travel to Carolina to face Cam Newton.
Oh, okay. I say plus 4.
Plus 4 it is.
Yes.
All right. Buffalo travels to Minnesota.
Plus 2.
2.5. Taking Buffalo.
This Buffalo team's bad.
Jacksonville at New Orleans. Now, I will say, watching the first week, Jacksonville was playing very hard. They have a lot of guys that clearly are fighting for positions.
Yeah, I'm going to say plus 3, Jacksonville.
Jacksonville plus 6.5.
Wow, yep. That is the lock of the week,
right? We're taking that all day. This is preseason, right?
What's the money
line
there?
Still preseason. No money lines up yet.
But is this the Saints' first home game post-Spygate? Also,
Didn't they play at home? They played two games already. Didn't they play in the
The Hall of Fame Bowl.
Yeah, I don't know where their game last week was. Who cares? It's preseason.
Yeah. Well, I think there's still some temptation to light it up. Here's a dude, Ryan, also, Mickey Loomis cleared by the FBI for all wiretapping.
Yeah. What? He cleared this.
What the hell's going on here? I don't get this.
I don't know, Sean.
How does ESPN report this? And they must have to settle with. How did they not settle with the New Orleans Saints there?
Well, either they need to get sued for libel.
No, they are. The Saints were suing them last I saw.
They have to pay then. And, I mean, that's a clear-cut case of what you can't do. You can't report something as fact, and it turned out to be
And also, true. This is way off the course of everything, but what happened to the dude in Syracuse who was molesting those kids? Is that just, like, not talked about?
Sidebar. So I don't know if you remember the situation, but Jim Boeheim actually got a lot of negative press for basically coming out and saying the kid was full of shit. Like, this is, the kid's just trying to get attention.
No, that wasn't that was the head coach, right?
Yeah, Jim Boeheim. So
defended his assistant coach.
What was his name? Bion or something like that?
Yeah.
It was his assistant coach. He came out and said the kid was just looking for press. Now, this outraged many people. Like, he's a victim, this and that.
Yes.
Well, it turns out he was lying. And I think he actually flip-flopped a couple of times. He said he was lying, and he retracted it, and it turned out the kid's full of shit. So, I mean, where there's smoke, there's fire, so who knows? Maybe there was a situation, but yeah, nothing's really come of it.
But yeah, it does seem like there was some other stuff that was pretty credible that just...
Yeah, there was like a couple ball boys, I thought.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I don't know. All right, don't want to get too distracted. Let's focus on the Lions.
Yeah, you're going to get me talking about Penn State again. All right, Lions at Ravens.
All right, Lions 3.5.
Lions 3.
See, all right.
Like the dog. Moving on to Saturday. Get the Battle of New York. Giants, the road team, versus the Jets.
Pick them.
Yeah, so for some reason the Giants are getting 1.5 points.
How can you give anyone points in this game?
I don't know.
Tim Tebow.
Yeah, I guess that's the
Christ himself, Ryan. I don't know if you saw. Now, Tim Tebow is a man of God, but yet essentially committed an act of blasphemy by portraying himself as Jesus Christ in the latest edition of GQ.
I thought you were going to talk about when he ran around with his shirt off.
Yeah, no, he's shirtless. But he has his arms pulled back, almost like Creed in Arms Wide Open. Oh. But he's basically strung out like a Jesus Christ. Your thoughts?
Wow, maybe he's starting to figure it out. And he probably got his dick wet or something. He's all excited about it and realized that Jesus is full of shit.
Dude, I was at the gym on the treadmill. And
wait a second. You go to a gym?
Yeah, I had a guest pass.
All right. Thought we were breaking some news here.
No, I went, I had a guest pass. I went and played some ball at the...
Oh, okay.
The Hollywood 24-Hour Fitness.
Oh, nice.
Not the one you went to, the one on, like, Vine or whatever?
Yeah, the one I used to go to was LA Fitness.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And then not to be mistaken with the West Hollywood 24-Hour Fitness slash...
That's just a bathhouse, right?
Yeah, it's just cute, yeah.
Well, anyway, you know, typical garbage pickup game. Guys not running back, playing a full court game. No one plays defense. A
lot of fouls.
A lot of cherry picking. Guys just calling fouls all the time. Garbage game. So I just played one game of that and got frustrated. Got on the treadmill. And there, I was watching, and I forget who it was. It might have been Mort or one of those ESPN reporters. And they were talking about how many snaps Tim Tebow will play in a game. Tim Tebow, quarterback, we're talking 6-7 snaps a game. And then it just hit me. It's like, but yet he's the most covered guy on your network?
Yeah.
You can't say he's only going to play 6 or 7 snaps and cover him so much.
Sal Palantonio has been at every day of Jets camp. Yeah, every day he's reporting from Jets camp.
Because they tell him to.
Yeah.
Everyone talks about the media's bullshit, but I've never seen anything like this Tim Tebow. And I kind of like Tim Tebow. I have nothing against Tim Tebow.
Did you see what Eli Manning said?
He's the third most talked about quarterback.
No, he made a comment. I guess they asked him about the Tim Tebow, Mark Sanchez situation. He's like, yeah, what's going on with that? I told Carr to take his shirt off and jog around after practice. Maybe we get some press over here.
I mean, really.
Eli getting funny.
Yeah. Well, he's just riding the confidence off that amazing SNL appearance.
Oh, I thought you were going to reference the DirecTV.
Where he's a fairy.
Yeah,
I should
two-time
mention
Super Bowl MVP winning fairy.
You're talking about fairies?
Anyway.
Him and Dion.
Kansas City travel. Oh, little interstate battle here. Kansas City and St. Louis. Kansas City at St. Louis.
I'm going to say St. Louis plus one.
Kansas City plus one. Taking the dog.
I thought there was a trick there somewhere.
Washington at Chicago.
Give me Washington 3.5.
Washington 1.5.
Wow. Really respecting RG3. Yeah.
I think he's just going to play a lot.
Didn't catch the highlights of him.
Yeah, apparently he looked good. San Francisco travels to Houston.
San Fran plus 2.
Plus 3. Give me the dog.
It's pretty, yeah.
This one's a little strange. Seattle at Denver.
All right, so now you're saying it's a little strange. That makes me think plus 5?
Pick 'em.
So strange the other
way.
So
who are we to? Now I'm forced to decide here.
Give me Denver, man. I think Peyton Manning was kind of embarrassed with his performance week 1.
I don't think Peyton's going to play a lot. Give me Seattle. They have 3, like, backup quality quarterbacks. I think they. I'm going to take Seattle here. Crazy.
All right. No, I see the logic there. All right.
All right. So now we're moving on to Sunday, I guess. And look at this. Hall of Famer Andrew Luck travels to Pittsburgh to take on the Steel Curtain. There must be a mistake here. The Colts aren't favored by 14 points.
Colts plus 3.5?
Yeah, I'm taking that because Andrew Luck's going to play a full half probably. And then, Monday Night Football, Eagles-Patriots. Eagles at Patriots.
Eagles plus 3.
2.5. Give me the dog. So, yeah, I'm just going to take the dogs here.
Now, Ryan, let's do a quick analysis if we could.
All right.
Is there any value in... Now, most of these spreads are either plus 3 or under plus 3, a large majority of them.
So you're saying
are
just
we
take
better
the money
off
lines.
Money line? Your thoughts?
No. Because I want to say 3 of the picks I had last week, well, for a couple of reasons. One, you don't have the overtime factor. Teams are going to go for 2.
Yes, that was something I did not think when I...
So, like, for example, the Giants game, the Giants ended up losing by a point because Jacksonville went for two.
Two.
But I had Giants plus two, so it didn't matter. So I'm taking the points because the concept here is that, you know, these are going
to
be...
Yeah, basically, it's 17-10. They get the go-ahead touchdown.
They're going
to
go for two.
I mean, the tying touchdown.
Game over.
Yeah, and they win by one or they lose by one. Either way, you want those two points.
You
want
to have the dog in these situations.
Okay, so normally there's not a lot of value in 2.5 points versus a money line, but because teams are playing straight out to win, you're saying it makes sense.
I'm taking that. Yeah, you're going to see a lot more. I don't know. You see a lot more. Just going for two. You might see some situations where they don't kick field goals and they go for it. So, yeah, I'm going with the dogs. I'm predicting of the 16, I'm predicting 10-6.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, Ryan. Well, I think we covered it all here in the week of sports. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Sports Gambling Podcast. Make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes or check us out at sportsgamblingpodcast.com. You can always check us out on the old Twitter, @GamblingPodcast. That is @GamblingPodcast. Make sure you click through the Amazon link on our website. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Sports Gambling Podcast. I'm Sean, stacking the muddy green, and he is Ryan. Kramer, let it ride.